Marisa Cloutier-Bristol always dreamed of having a big family. She has one son, Brett, who's 19 and is off at college. She always wanted more kids, but couldn't have them because of fertility issues. I met her one recent morning at her North Attleboro home, which is plastered with photos of her son, as well as her late husband, John, and her current husband, Michael.
So, yeah, I was one of four kids. My husband was one of two. So I would have had 10 kids if I could have. That was not going to be John. John was going to, he was like, okay, four is pretty good. But never in our wildest dreams did we ever want an only child.
Marisa tried fertility treatments with her first husband, John, including about 6 months of in vitro fertilization at Women and Infants Hospital in Providence. But Marisa and John were told that all of their embryos were abnormal, and they decided to stop treatment.
We met with her, my husband and I, at the time, and she told me that they were all abnormal. And at that point, we thought, well, she didn't recommend putting them back in. And at that point, we thought was just going to discard of them.
Years went by, and John died suddenly of a heart attack in 2006. A couple years later, Marisa met Michael, and the two of them tried another round of IVF treatment at Women and Infants. But those treatments were also unsuccessful. After considering other options like egg donation and adoption, Marisa decided to just accept that she wasn't going to have any more children and move on.
And it emotionally had taken a toll on us. Like, we kept saying to ourselves, how much further can we go? Why, you know, like, we just have to be happy right now. We have to just adjust, rearrange our plans, just accept that it's not going to happen. I mean, it was by far, I'm telling you, not easy. I couldn't be around babies for the longest time. I couldn't go to baby showers for the longest time. It took a long time for it to go away. And it doesn't truly, I guess, ever go away. You always think about it, but you just sometimes have to come to terms with what you're handed, I guess, with what you're dealt.
But then, in August 2017, Marisa received a letter from Women and Infants Hospital.
I got a letter in the mail telling me that I had to pay a $500 fee to keep my frozen embryo in storage. And I was like, huh, this is kind of crazy. This must be a mass mailing. This is definitely not mine. Like, I mean, I was insane, actually.
Marisa made a call, and after some back and forth with a hospital administrator and a deep dive into her past medical records, she discovered that, in fact, an embryo of hers had been frozen in 2004, the same year she and her late husband, John, decided to stop IVF treatment.
It has brought back losing my husband all over again. I hate to say, it's like grieving. It's like grieving all over again. It's like grieving a child that I could have had that I don't have. I feel completely and totally robbed. I'm on antidepressants. I don't sleep. it's really taken its emotional toll. It really has.
Marisa contacted a lawyer, Jeff Catalano, and the two filed suit in federal court in January. The lawsuit alleges negligence and other charges, including breach of informed consent, because Catalano says the hospital failed to have John and Marisa sign informed consent forms. These are forms that determine what a hospital can do with a couple's embryo in the event of divorce or death. Catalano says that missing this form limits Marisa's options in terms of what to do with the embryo, because John, who has since passed away, isn't able to give consent.
To think that it has to sit there for eternity, and to know, will it really sit there? Or, you know, what are they going to do with it? Are they going to test it? What are they going to do with it? The wondering, or the what could have been. You know, when my son said to me, so I could have had a sibling, killed me.
George Annis, who is the director for the Center for Health Law, Ethics, and Human Rights at Boston University's School of Public Health, said fertility clinics need to have contingency plans in place.
The good practice has been for a long time to get an agreement up front on these things. you know, on what can be done with an embryo after one of the couples dies. It's really kind of strange thing to contemplate. You're having a child, or you're trying to have a child, but the clinic wants you to figure out, well, what happens if you die instead? But you should. I mean, they should do that, because these questions are really very hard.
In a statement, Women and Infants Hospital said it was unable to comment specifically on an individual patient's care due to strict privacy laws. But in the statement, the hospital said, quote, "Our approach to care is guided by comprehensive policies and procedures that evolve as our services, technology, and the needs of our patients change. We maintain a commitment to open and honest communication with all patients about all aspects of their fertility treatment." The lawsuit is seeking damages from the hospital. An amount is to be determined, but Catalano says the main motive behind it is to hold the hospital accountable and make sure something like this doesn't happen to someone else.
Everything we know today shows that, you know, according to us, they have not fulfilled their obligations to Marisa in terms of confirming what was to be, first of all, notifying her that there was a frozen embryo and getting their permissions to what was to be done with it. And then in not telling her about it for many, many years. So we feel that we have a very strong case for breach of informed consent. We have a very strong case for negligence against the institution. Mm-hmm. And my firm shares the same concern as Marisa's, that we just don't want this to happen to anybody else, because we're dealing with the human life form. We're not dealing with, you know, furniture that's kept in storage many years. This is something that it's, you know, could have been another life.
This is Madeline List with the Providence Journal.